I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
I would like to introduce you all to Mr. Pat Scott. Pat is an executive in the retail world. Pat is an extremely generous person, personally. With his time and his treasure, he donates his time and treasure to many different charities, and the company that he works for is also very, very generous to all kinds of community needs. And I wanted to have Pat come in for a minute, and when we get the neighborhood guys together here, we're going to continue talking about faith in our system, but I want to take a few minutes to talk about something near and dear to my heart. Recently, I wrote some articles about some kids who are on the spectrum, and they are important to me. And I never realized that schools, when they deal with the kids, they deal with their educational properties. But I also wanted to figure out, from a safety and security point of view, what I could do for them. So I wrote some articles in Parents Autism Magazine, and I actually won an award. I'm very proud of it. But one of the things I know about Mr. Scott and his company is that they do a lot of this kind of community stuff. So, Pat, I'd like to welcome you to Chasing Justice. And I want to talk a couple minutes about, I know you were telling me before we got started here that your company just did something for the Autism Walk. Is that what it was?
Yes. Thank you, Joe, for having me. What we do in my company is we reach out to organizations, and we go this weekend. We are going to a Autism Walk to benefit parents with autistic children. And people don't realize how an autistic child, how that affects the whole life of the family.
Yes, and I know it's the same thing as you got to, I see it in the schools. You know, it's difficult for the teachers that work with the kids who are on the spectrum. And I know I've been out in the world and I got to know those kids from being in school with them. And then I'd be out in the world and I would see a kid just being themselves. But people are making comments, they're saying stuff, and this is what we were talking about, is that people don't realize this child's on the spectrum. They're expecting them to behave a certain way, but they don't understand what's going on.
And that's exactly it. In the retail world, you'll see a child that's crying, screaming, which you feel is a disruptive child, that parent should take that child out of the store and remove it because it's an annoyance to them. These children have absolutely no control over what they do, and we need to accept that and understand the world of autism and what that child's going through. That parent is working the best they can with that child. I have one thing. We had a young lady, 6 years old, shopping with her mother. She was in the store. She was upset, displaying the only way she knows how to express herself. So the mother, everybody's looking at the mother for the mother to do something with the child. I went over and got a balloon and asked the mother if I could give her daughter a balloon. And she smiled and said, "That'd be great." So a simple balloon in this child's life really made that whole shopping trip pleasant for her. So the mother was able to shop a little bit. And as they went around the store, she saw me in the young lady, the six-year-old, does not know how to display, how to be
more expressive.
More expressive, to say thank you. She's very well. She's not verbal. Mm-hmm. So every time the mother came in with the daughter, I would go up and smile and say hello. And the daughter was real shy and reserved at first. Now she actually looks forward to coming into the store.
Right, and I think the best part of the story is what you told me about that first balloon. I thought that was great. It revealed a lot about
that first balloon she kept until it deflated. Weeks she had that balloon, and she would point at it and say my name, that I gave her that balloon. And that meant a lot to her mother because she can't express. She can't speak. She's...
Nonverbal. It's very difficult.
And it's extremely difficult. So when her mother saw that, she smiled and it brought joy to her that she's relating something outside of the house.
And I think that's awesome. And that's what I wanted to bring that story up. And when I got to know these kids, on a one-on-one basis. You know, you start to see, they say, and these are not the real names, but they would say, hey, Bobby, when Bobby comes in, Bobby likes to wear his hat. And he's always wearing his hat. Sometimes he takes the hat off and he will throw it down the hallway. It's okay. He'll go get the hat. That's just what makes Bobby happy. We let him do that. And I started to get to know the kid. They have a little store inside the school and they run the store. And I would go in and get my coffee and, you know, the kids greet you. And they're so excited when you just are nice to them instead of trying to direct them and tell them what to do. And I know talking to the parents, this is one of the things where I got feedback from that article. That they were so happy that instead of trying to punish my child for my child's condition, which is what a lot of teachers do, I find that, and they don't really understand that they punish the child because she won't listen. She keeps doing the same thing over and over. That is part of her condition. That is not something you punish her for. You have to adapt around it. And I know these parents are thrilled when the kids can have that moment of joy. And that little balloon story, I just thought it revealed your heart to me, Pat, and that's why I wanted you to come on and tell about it.
There's a couple of things that the parents will tell you that an autistic child is looking for acceptance. Acceptance, whether they know in their mind that they're not like me and Jack and Bill. They just want to be accepted into it. There was on the news a couple of weeks ago about an autistic child in a library. And that autistic child tapped the tape. That's what he did 2 times. Just tapped the video game. A librarian demanded that the child get removed from the library because he was disruptive. What was disruptive about that child tapping a tape twice?
And that really comes down to people not understanding autism, and they don't understand what goes on with it. I find that very difficult. I have a friend of mine, really a great guy, and he has a son who's on the spectrum. And ever since the boy is little, he told me one of the most heart-wrenching stories I ever heard. He talked about how him and his wife, they so much wanted a child, and then they had this little boy, and he was a sweet little baby, and they loved him so much, but they very quickly found out he was on the spectrum. And he's also very nonverbal. And they couldn't find a way to connect with this kid. They just couldn't connect, and they tried everything, and they were heartbroken, because the guy loved his boy so much. Till one day, they took him to an amusement park here in Pennsylvania, and it's a special character amusement park, where they go in his Sesame Street characters, I think it's Sesame Place it's called. They went there, and this kid came alive. Every time at Sesame Place, they have this parade of characters, where they have all the characters on different vehicles, and they come down the middle of the main street, and everybody sees them. This kid was so thrilled at seeing that parade. When they got home, the next day, his father comes home from work, and the boy is putting all of the pillows and everything from the furniture into the middle of the room, and he was verbalizing something about the count, the count, the count. And he just thought he was trying to count the pillows, till he realized the boy was recreating the parade. And he had some of these dolls, and he went and got them, and he put them in the places exactly where they were in the parade. And then he wanted him and his father to stand there and look at it. And I said, wow. He goes, and he smiled. And we connected when we did that. He goes, to this day, we develop that parade every single day. We put that parade together in our living room at least once a day. And we connect. He sits there, holds my hand, and I look at him. And he goes, and that's the only connection that I have to this boy. But it's real, and it's genuine, and it's fantastic. He had to learn to do what the child needed. And when you told me that story about the balloon, I was absolutely moved. And I know that's the kind of thing you do all the time. And your company supports this, right?
Absolutely. We donate a lot of product to the walks. Tomorrow, we are donating food and beverages. We donate healthy snacks to the kids that are walking.
And let me stop here. I know that's great. The company does do all that. And I know you reach into your pocket personally because I've seen you do it. And I appreciate it. And all the parents that are out there, we all know somebody who's on the spectrum. And they are beautiful, wonderful kids. And I was just really thrilled to have you here talk about this. Now, one thing you brought up, Pat, I thought was important, back to safety and security. Unfortunately, sometimes these kids can be runners. Now, in schools, if there's school people out there listening, you know what that means. Somebody goes bolting out a side door that's not alarmed and they take off. Unfortunately, the kids on the spectrum can also do that. They take off and run. They run from the house, not just from school. And how do we find them? Well, I try and teach police officers, when you have a child who's on the spectrum and they take off, the very first place you should go look is any body of water. And you say, why is that? I don't know. But a lot of these children are drawn to bodies of waters, and a lot of times you'll see when there's a tragedy, the child is drowned. They go to the body of water, and they go in the water. So search for the body of water first, and go see if you can find the child. But you brought up, what about some kind of a thing like a wristband or an ankle band that we could find him? There actually is equipment like that out there that parents can buy, that people can use, that if the child does take off, you can activate that equipment and find out exactly where they are with GPS coordinates. The modern world is amazing. So I want to thank Mr. Scott for his decency, his humanity, and for looking out for these kids. And Pat, I'm going to ask you if you'll join the neighborhood in a couple of minutes, if you'll pop in with the fellows. I'll introduce you.
Absolutely. I'd love to be part of the neighborhood.
I think you'll like them. We got a lot of great guys here. So we'll be back in 1 minute. We'll pop back into the neighborhood and we'll get that conversation going. For a second, I just want to talk about my sponsors who are great and help bring this program here. The America Out Loud Network has honored me to allow me to come here and talk to you, to bring my fellas from the neighborhood here, to talk about the things that I find important in the world. But some of the companies that take care of us here and help us also is A-Plus Technology and Security out of Long Island. You can look them up at aplustechnology.com. They are absolute leaders in any kind of electronic equipment, cameras, visitor management systems. They have robotics. They have STEM labs for kids in the schools. You can't believe these things they put together. They're fantastic. And I would say look them up, aplustechnology.com. They're fantastic. Another one I'm going to talk about, to my brothers and sisters out there in law enforcement, Blue Magazine. Absolutely fantastic. I've been getting a lot of emails from people that they've been reading the magazine. They love it. They love the articles that are in there. I always liked it. I've been blessed that I've been able to write for them for a long time. So you can find the Blue Magazine under www.thebluemagazine.com. So we'll be right back. Thanks.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I'd like to invite you into our conversation here in the neighborhood. This is a Jersey neighborhood. I got my Jersey people all around here, and we're ready to talk about some topics of the day. We have with us tonight Mr. Jack Patterson. Jack is an all-around great guy. He's the backbone of America. He really is. It's people like Jack that make the country great. We have Mr. Bill Dallas. Dallas is a man of faith. He is really the conscience of the neighborhood here. He's been a person who has always brought the good side to any situation that comes up. And then we have Mr. Jim Giordano here. Jim, very active in politics locally. Jim is also our contrarian. Jim will take the other side of an argument if it means he can bring out some truth. But you always get the bottom line out of him, and that's what I love about talking to him. And we've invited Mr. Scott back from our last segment to join us here in the neighborhood. Bunch of fellas, we're going to have some conversations. So, gents, when we started out, I was talking about, in the beginning, faith in the system. And I think if we define that system, not just as the specific criminal justice system, but if we look in the bigger picture, what systems in our lives that we count on all the time that really are not serving us very well. So here in round one, bing, here we go. Let's talk about the court system, Jim. You had something to say.
Well, let's talk about all the systems. What systems in this country work? I defy anybody to, other than fighting a war, Social Security doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Medicare doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Judicial system, we've already talked about that. The criminal justice system. The school systems, they don't work. Systems. There's a statistic that came out today. 65% of the high school graduates cannot pass basic skills tests.
65%.
That's math and reading. So we're spending all this money in education. Why is that?
Well, we're trying to do the right thing. We want to educate our children, so we pay our local property tax to fund our schools.
Basically, what a lot of times I think about the subject of teachers teaching and what our kids are getting out of it, it comes down to two questions, and they're controversial. Number one is, Do you want to pay teachers a lot of money so that you supposedly will get good teachers? Or do you want to pay what's could be considered a decent salary, so only those people who are truly interested in becoming teachers will seek out that position? I know that's controversial, but it's a question that we really should answer in our own minds.
Well, let me address that for a second. So the point is, do we pay people a high salary thinking we're going to get the best and brightest? Now, look at how many teachers we need. All right? It's just like law enforcement. We need lots and lots of people for law enforcement. So let me go from my thought here. I got it. So getting somebody who's highly educated and quality as a teacher, and being in the schools, I got to tell you, I have never seen people that are more caring and giving of their time and their money and their talent to try and help these kids. It's not so much the teachers, I think that's the problem. It's there are so many of them. How can you pay so many people so much money? And your second point was, or do you make it something where only those dedicated to do it will do it? In the beginning, a 20-year-old, 23-year-old will get their teaching certificate and they will teach for free because they love it, they're on fire, they think it's great. But then life creeps in, they get married, they have kids of their own, they want to buy a house, they need things. So for them to spend that 40 hours a week, they need to be paid a decent salary. And that's where I see those two points.
But yet when you make it so financially attractive, well, you get the opposite end of the spectrum. You're going to get people in that job that are there because financially it's so attractive to take sure. that position. That's the fine line.
So you're saying we have to do a better job vetting our teachers and seeing who we bring into the profession.
Right, because as Jim said, we're not getting the quality education that we're paying for.
Right.
Teachers make all the difference in the world. If you get a teacher that's just there to earn a paycheck, though, you're going to get poor output from that teacher. You get a teacher there that's really dedicated, regardless of the amount of money that you pay them, you're going to get a quality education for that child.
And thereby hangs the question of the percentages that we were just talking about. Well, are we getting those teachers that are there because it's an attractive position, because of the benefits and because of the money? Is that already happening? That's my question.
Well, I'm going to throw out there in a second, but Pat's itching here to get in. Come on, Pat.
Thank
Welcome
you.
To the neighborhood.
I think the responsibility, the onus is on the parents. I think the parents had the children in the first place. It's your job to raise the child. It just doesn't stop at conception or at birth. You need to take that child and enrich that child's life. The teachers have the children for 6 hours a day. The child comes home because you want a new BMW, you want a big house, you want a pool, you want to go on vacations, that you have a nanny, or you take your kid to after school so you can afford all this stuff. And it's your responsibility to raise that child until they're off on their own. I think that's the parents' responsibility.
Well, I think there's certainly a part there. Absolutely, parents are huge, and they should be doing education at home.
You look at the parents that really drive the child's education. Those are successful children,
right?
Becoming
they value
adults.
Education.
Absolutely.
They value. Bill, you're itching.
How many parents actually sit down with their kids at night and said, "How much homework do you have? Mm. Let me help you with your homework." You go into a lot of the poorer neighborhoods, I can name them, but I don't want to, and they're not getting the good teachers that they need. And consequently, you're getting these undereducated guys and students that are looking at a way out of the system, and they're looking at basketball stars and baseball stars, and that's going to be their focus instead of getting their math skills and their basic.
And that's a cultural thing. That's for all of us in our country. Do we value education? Do we tell our, like somebody said, do you sit around and tell your kids do the homework? I know raising my kids, and I got four of them. I've been blessed with four beautiful children. Two older and two younger, and yes, with the same wife. She's the same wife. We decided to have two families, and I wanted to raise children my entire life. I didn't want a beach house. But what we did is with these kids is I remember when my oldest son, Joe, had homework to do. In the beginning, he was young, you know, I'm excited to do the homework. As he started to get older, I'd work all day, I'd come home, I'd be exhausted, and it's like, oh, can you help Joe with his homework tonight? And I would sit down, all right, what do you have for homework? He would explain it to me, and I don't want to say it was a drudgery, but it was tough when I was tired and exhausted. I can't imagine having all kinds of other life distractions where that's not really valuable at all to these different areas of our country. But I think it's a matter of valuing education.
And to put a Pat's point in what you just mentioned, the Asian community, typically, they value education, and their children do extremely well in school and on academic tests. So it is definitely a cultural element involved.
But you also have to understand, what about the single parents, you know, that are trying to raise a kid and be interested in helping them get their education, and they're trying to maintain just a meager subsistence on maybe a young mom has got a waitress job and she comes home at night and she has to help the kid with the homework. There's not a father there to be the example that the kid can follow. And
there's plenty of single mothers who drive their kids. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the most successful people in this country, they came from broken households. But I agree, it's a lot more difficult.
I think that's in the minority.
Have those sociological pressures.
You owe that to the child, to raise the child, to be there for the child. To teach the child your values. And if you're going to put the child in aftercare, my particular children, I did without a lot. I drove cars that were 10, 15 years old. I lived in a smaller house. I didn't need it. It was more important that my children get the base and the foundation of what it's like to be a good person, what it's like to be good to other people. And that's what I believe in. And from there, you get the education. Not every child is the same. I know a guy who has a child who's an attorney. And the other child's a carpenter. Same parents, same lifestyle, raised the same way. But you know what? You support the child in whatever they feel comfortable in. And you aid them in the drive to be a great person. And that's what we need to do as parents.
Right. You know, here's what I'm going to throw out to the group, because here's what I see. The teachers, I think, try as hard as they can. I think the moms, the dads, do what they can, what they're available to do. What about the unions getting involved and not having accountability? Not saying, okay, we're going to have different kinds of accountability for the teachers. Once you're in forever. I think this hurts the teachers.
Enter at the 65%. We've been addressing the family side of the equation, which is a variable, but what are we teaching our children? We're not teaching them. In a general sense, we do. We're indoctrinating them. There's too much politics within the school systems. Mm-hmm. There's too much social engineering. There's less reading and writing, which should be the focus.
Well, isn't this opportune? Everybody in the neighborhood here is hanging out, and guess what? You never know who's going to show up here in the neighborhood. It's Jersey. So now we have Mr. Rob Williams is here. Rob is actually probably one of the best educators that I've ever had the pleasure to meet. Rob is a principal of a large middle school, and I'm glad he stopped by, because you never know who's going to come here to the neighborhood. So Rob, what we're talking about right now is systems in our country. And how are they working for this? They failing. We were just talking about the school systems. What do you see as a person involved in schools, the biggest problem to getting education from the teachers to the kids that have single moms, the kids that don't have all the advantages other kids have? What's the problem getting it from the teachers to the kids to make it valuable?
You know what, Joe, there's a lot of things that come into play there. It's not just one. You know, nowadays in society, there's so many things that impact education. You know, you have the political end of it. You have the social media end of it. You have the state assessment end of it. So there's a lot of things that impact education. And also, obviously, when I was walking here, I found out that, you guys were talking about students not getting, like I said, certain services possibly. So the service end of it has changed dramatically. So education spends a tremendous amount of money, again, in the testing aspect. So they're pulling monies out of the school so we can do state testing on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. What is the purpose of all this state testing? Everybody's doing this state testing. And I was talking to people in New York the other day, and they were saying that they have about 85% opt-out of this state testing. Yeah. Well, what's the purpose of all that testing?
You know, Joe, there's always been state testing. It could have been years ago, the Iowas, the Cats, the Mats. But now again, with all the, again, additional people getting their fingers in the pot here, look at Park in New Jersey. Pearson has a huge footprint on that. Okay, New Jersey spends an enormous amount of money on Park testing. The purpose, obviously, is to get assessments and find out kids' weaknesses and strengths, and if they're where the weaknesses are, what we need to do to make, you know, kids educationally sound. But unfortunately, the amount of money that we spend on Park isn't like it used to be. You as a child probably took an Iowa test or a MAT or a CAT. It didn't cost the amount of money that we're spending today. And we probably still got the same results as far as finding out where you needed some, you know, where you needed some help and what your strengths were. Right. We're just spending a tremendous amount of money, and I don't see that as stopping in the near future. I mean, federal funds are tied into state testing. So
is that part of the problem of getting education to the kids, this testing? Does that cause a problem in some way?
I think to some degree we overtest. You know, we have schools have their own assessments, states have their assessments, then you have the federal government that has obviously their requirements, so kids test on a regular basis. Whether it's chapter tests, whether it's midterms, whether it's Park testing, whether it's Linkit testing, whether it's Achieve 3000 testing, there's a lot of different assessments.
It sounds numbing with all this, and Jim's itching to get in here with something.
I know, Rob, and we've spoken about this many times. We've spoken about a lot of unfunded mandates precipitated from the state and local governments. So schools have become a lot more than just teaching institutions. They've become social institutions. They've become guidance institutions. They've become...
Family away from family.
Yeah. So much more than when we went to school. And I think that is what's driving up the costs. And the question is, what do we want our schools to do? Do we want them to teach and educate, or do we want them to be a social program?
Well, you know what the thing is, Jim, and the shift in education is also the shift in society. When you grew up, you know, when you grew up, you had two parents, you had a community that looked after you. You know, things have changed in society. Kids spend most of their times on social media. Sure. You know what? They talk to their friends to get answers. They talk to somebody on a social media website they don't even know. So when you talk about guidance and you talk about counseling and things like that, it's changed dramatically because years ago, nowadays, counselors are tied up constantly dealing with issues pertaining to whether it's Snapchat, you know what,
Instagram,
all these different websites because, you know, kids spend most of their time on there. And you have single parents, and you have a lot of different social issues now that we didn't have when we were growing up. So it ties the hands of educators. And as a person, you want to help kids the best that you can. It's just, like I said, society has, you know, changed many factors.
It seems like the schools are becoming more the parent than the parents are. You know,
and I think that goes to Pat's point, to parents at home. But I think maybe our society, and I hate to say this, many people are helpless to do anything about it, and we've got that kind of a society where people just throw up their hands. It's not me, someone else do it, and they leave it to somebody like Rob.
Well, look,
my kid
how,
needs to have lunch, my kid needs to have breakfast, my kid needs to have a pat on the back. You got to do right that. You can't talk to my kid a certain way. We expect the school to do everything.
And you know what's different, Joe, is people don't know how to solve a lot of these problems. You know, parents, a lot of people don't know how to solve problems. You know, when I was a kid growing up, if you remember, in the window of homes in the town, there was a red hand, and that was a helping hand. That as a kid, if you had an issue, you could go and knock on the door and that person would help you. Well, look at today. You can't go knock on somebody's door because you don't know how that person is and what type of person that
is. We don't even know our neighbors.
Yeah. So years ago, we had that helping hand where kids could just go and that parent would come help you out and bring you home or do whatever they had to do. Nowadays, you know, we teach kids, again, don't knock on anybody's doors, don't talk to anybody. It's a whole different society. It's a whole different shift in society.
All right, I want to thank the gents here in the neighborhood right now because we're trying to solve their problems. We have a lot of things to talk about, and we've just talked about the schools. Let's throw up one that's really near and dear to all of us. How about the taxation system? Jack, you like paying taxes. You were telling me the other day, you can't wait to pay more taxes. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. The taxation system in my town in particular, it's a constant series of raises one after another. A local paper actually had an ad in it last year, not an ad, but a headline, stating that our town's expenses had not gone up. And I expressly say not, because it was odd to me that in the next sentence in our local paper, it said, but yet the taxes in my town are going to go up. Now,
what's the need for that extra money if it didn't go up?
Where is that extra money going to go if our expenses didn't go up? It goes into a war chest. It goes into something, let's say, that they can dip their hands into.
Right.
For private reasons. It's very frustrating.
Which is interesting. So, Pat, you've got tons and tons of money. We talked about that earlier. So paying these extra taxes, does that affect your life when taxes, your property taxes go up?
Personally, it doesn't. The taxes come and you have to pay them. There's not much you can do about it. You can go and go to the town meetings and voice your opinion. But the taxes, we do know where they go. As an educator, you know, Rob, that this money has to go into the schools for the safety of the children. And I don't want to keep going back to the schools, but that money needs to come from somewhere, and it needs to come from our pockets.
But so many times that the money is set aside for a specific purpose, and 9 times out of 10, it doesn't get used for that purpose. It gets used for something else that comes up at the last minute or somebody's pet project, and that's where the politicians get their hands in all this stuff, and that's when things start going downhill.
You know what? Let's take a look at that. Recently in New Jersey, a year ago, they raised the gas tax. Now, after they raised the gas tax, then the following year, they had to put on the ballot that politicians, as taxpayers, would we allow them to take that money and use it in other areas other than roads and transportation?
What it was meant for.
What it was meant for. So if they came to the public and they said, we needed this raise for the roads and for the bridges so that we had better transportations in the state, and then whatever it was, 6 months later, we had to vote and make sure that the politicians didn't take that money and use it elsewhere, obviously that's a problem because you came to us saying you needed it.
It's for a subterfuge.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden, you know, what you're saying, you know, as taxpayers, we have to, you know, have that on the ballot to ensure that they don't take it.
And at that point, we already knew that it was misappropriated.
Right. That money went towards pension funds that were underfunded to bring it back up. So that money that we're paying for the gas tax is not being used for what it was intended for.
Well, now, I'm going to throw out there also another form of unannounced taxing. Is, and I told you before, I'm not a fan of motor vehicle, even coming from a cop. A lot of motor vehicle is used to raise money. People pretend that it's not, but it really is. And this is where cops get in trouble with, you know, you heard back in the day, oh, there's a quota, you got to write so many tickets. Nowadays, we change that language. It's not a quota, there's a standard. And it's okay to have a standard. What that means is, how do you gauge police officers by the job they're doing? They're supposed to patrol, they're supposed to talk to suspicious people, they're supposed to stop dangerous drivers, they're supposed to investigate crime. So handing out tickets is part of the job, but you can't say every cop has to do 200 tickets. Instead, you can say the average number of tickets from this department is 50, so the standard is 50. But motor vehicle is used to raise money. It's an unstated kind of a taxation, just like raising fees. We're going to raise all these fees, we're going to raise all this other stuff, so that we don't have to say it's taxes, but they're still reaching into your pocket to take the money out.
Joe, do you mean the dangerous drivers who have a license plate like that's out? Is that the dangerous driver that you're looking at?
Here's our contrarian in the neighborhood. He's going to now argue about the license plate light. So my brother and sister officers, I want you to listen to this because this is really the crux of when Jim has to jump in here. He doesn't like the license plate light car stop. And Jim, why don't you like that license plate car stop?
I think it's offensive. I really do. People have lives to live. You know, you shouldn't be stopping somebody for license plate light that's out, for tinted windows.
Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, so let's think of some other ones you don't like.
Well, I'll be honest with you, speeding.
Speeding?
the roads are have a design speed. When there's nobody on the road and you're exceeding the speed limit, which is set low for some ungodly reason, why would you stop me if I'm doing 70 miles an hour on the parkway, and on the turnpike, and there's nobody around?
So as a civil engineer who does roads, you're saying they're designed to handle higher speeds.
The design speed on the parkway is 90 miles an hour.
90, but we can't go anywhere near that. You get tickets for that.
Some people can't, maybe.
Maybe they were designed back
That's a shot at the cops. That's why Jim is going to get the wood shampoo when we're done here, fellas.
Yeah, the question is, were they designed for that, the current population, or were they designed, you know,
on a congested road? No.
Okay. But what you're saying is then that, okay, if you, as driving your car on the parkway, you get to assess whether it's crowded or not. So if you've deemed that the road isn't crowded, you get to go 90. No. And if you sit there and say, well, it's crowded and maybe there's too many cars, now I can go 65. So you get to assess that.
That's exactly correct.
So we have our contrarian here. He wants to determine whether or not he will follow that law, which isn't that another part of a broken system? So I appreciate everybody in the neighborhood here. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we'll be back in a minute. When we come back, I'm glad we have Rob here. We're going to talk a little bit about some school security issues and the need that schools have. And Rob is particularly a good person to know this because he is concerned day and night with the safety of your kids. So I want to talk for a minute about some of my sponsors. MCONIT, MCONIT.com. MCONIT, they are IT support, third-party maintenance, and data security for large companies. They come in and take care of the things that you need. If you're off-site and one of your IT products goes down, you call MCONIT and they have somebody that can fix it for you. Absolute professionals. So if you ever need anything to take care of your system, you have larger systems, MCONIT is the way to go. All right, we'll be back in a minute for round three.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, round three, and we're back. In this segment, I've decided to keep Principal Rob Williams here with me to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, and I think it is to most people out there with children or grandchildren. And that is the topic of school safety and security. Now, Rob is a nationwide speaker. He's gone out and spoken all over the country about different school topics and education of children. He's really a great principal on top of all of that. So, Rob, I appreciate you staying after that neighborhood visit to have a little conversation about school security. How big is the school you're in? Is it a small school or a bigger school?
Joe, it's 270,000 square foot, and there's approximately 1,500 people in there.
Now, is that a high school?
It's a middle school. Two grades.
What grades are in there?
Seventh and eighth.
So a lot of middle school. I know the one I went to was sixth, seventh, and eighth. That's kind of a common...
That's more common, yes.
That's more common.
I couldn't fit a sixth grade in there.
Okay. But you have a building, you were saying, that's all sixth grade?
Yes.
Okay. So the building, all the sixth grade kids, and then you just have the seventh and eighth graders, 1,500 of them. When it comes to school security, you know, obviously a hot topic right now. We've talked about in the past about these school shootings and the violence that takes place in school, and obviously parents are scared to death. An article I recently had on America Out Loud's homepage was about not being able to heal. You know, it seems to me pretty clear that after the horror of Columbine, as a society, we looked at that and we said, here's what was wrong. If we fix this, we'll be safe. And we went along and we healed from that. We moved on. Then we had the absolute horror and tragedy and the loss of the babies in Sandy Hook, and we never thought we would have seen that. But we looked at that and we said, well, here's what was wrong with the school. Here's what was wrong with the security. If we just fix those things, we'll be safe. And we kind of healed and we moved on, even though it was part of our lives. When Parkland happened, Parkland High School had every possible thing that you could ask for. They had electronic equipment. They had a cop at the building, and the cop didn't go in and save those children. And I know I have an 18-year-old daughter, and her and her friends watched live on social media these children running for their lives and bleeding to death in the hallway. Because of that, we haven't been able to heal. So I see the school security, workplace violence security thing really starting to take off. And as you know, that is my business. I teach and train police officers, school people, and business people how to be safe. But as a principal of a school, those children, those 1,500 kids, and your staff, they're your responsibility, aren't they?
Correct.
And the decisions you make about them in an event like that, a horror event like that, could be the difference between life and death.
Absolutely, Joe.
So if we have a lot of school people out here listening tonight, or cops listening here that want to do the right thing for their schools, where do they start to figure out if their schools are safe? How do they figure out the myriad of equipment they could buy that could cost them so much money? How do they figure out where do they start?
You know what, Joe? You know, it's a great question. You know what, 100 years ago when they came out with the three R's in school, reading, writing, arithmetic. Well, you know what? It's 2018 now. It's the four S's. It's safety, security of students and staff. And to do that, just like we sit there and assess educational programs, you have to assess a school building. You have to go in, you have to look at its surroundings on the outside and the inside. You have to get professionals to sit there and come to your school, look, assess, evaluate, make decisions collectively. A school security person, principal, teachers, and we can ensure that kids are safe on a regular basis. So when you talk about that, if you are not doing that, if you don't look at your school and what its capabilities are, or if you have not reached their security capabilities, you need to do something. It is paramount. And if you're not doing it, you're doing your kids a disservice. The two safest places the kids feel secure are their home and their school. So both have to be secure places for kids. And the school, unfortunately, with, you know, obviously the size and the number, you have to take a lot of time and put a lot of effort into it. But at the end of the day, with everything going on now, these are events that happen on a regular basis now.
Right.
So it's not that years ago you hit under the desk for the air, you know, for the air raid that didn't happen. These things actually do happen. So you have to take it seriously, and you have to plan, you have to assess, and you continually make it better.
So I guess the point you're making, this is the point I make when I get called by a superintendent or a school board or a parent, where does my school start, is to assess what you have right now. Are you safe? To take a snapshot of your school security profile, or even your business, same thing. Any, a school building, a workplace building, a movie theater, they're a physical building where people come and go, and you have to make sure it's safe. So a school threat assessment is the first place to start, you think?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen various types of assessments, the free ones and the ones that are done professionally?
Absolutely, Joe.
And what's the difference between the free ones and the ones that you actually pay for?
It's like buying a used car, Joe. As soon as you drive it off the lot, the warranty's gone. You know what? It's like me hiring a teacher. I want the best teacher for a classroom. So I'm going to hire the one who's most knowledgeable, can relate to kids, know their programs. If I'm hiring somebody to come in and assess it, I want to see what his or her background is. I want to get their, some professional references. I want to know what type of person this is. Not just some guy who started a business because all of a sudden all this is going on and somebody goes out and says, well, let me hire ABC, security, and they have no experience in that area. So, you have to do your due diligence. You have to be smart and hire the right person to come in.
Sure. And I appreciate that you say that. And I want people to understand that there are free ones that people can get. There's a lot of companies that say, we'll do a free assessment for you. And everyone I've talked to that's had them, it's basically a sales pitch for that company's products. Yeah. You need to have a camera, but you need to have an ABC Johnson camera, and that's what I happen to sell. So you don't really get that in-depth look. In a real threat assessment, when you look at, when I do them, I start from the minute as I ride up the road, I start to look at the neighborhood. Where is this schoolhouse? What kind of community is going on here? Are there highways? Are there airports around? Is there a lot of traffic? Is it rural? Are there bodies of water? I start to look at those things, because if you have a kid who's a runner, you ever have a runner out of one of your schools?
Yes.
Where they take off?
Yes.
And them kids take off. And we were talking earlier in the program, if it's a kid who's special needs or a child who's on the spectrum and there's a body of water, they're heading for that body of water. And if you don't see them going, that could be a tragedy. Now, I see a lot of schools, they're kind of getting the idea to lock their doors. We never used to lock the doors, right? Now we lock the doors. I did a program for Homeland Security in Pennsylvania, and about 60 school districts, and I said, anybody here still not locking their front doors? And I said it kind of facetiously, and about 4 hands went up. And I couldn't believe it. I said, why don't you lock your door? And they said, well, the parents want to feel like it's an inviting, wonderful place, and they want to come whenever they want. So they put pressure on the board, and the board says the doors stay open. And I say, are you kidding me? You're basically asking for your children to be victimized. Now, I know, having spoken to you prior to this, having you on the show here, is that you lock your doors, don't you?
All doors are locked.
Right. What else can you say about school security? What's important? Tell the people out here who are thinking, what the heck do I do to make my school safer? As a principal, what's important to you? What's important to the kids?
You know, we've evolved in that area tremendously. You know, our doors are locked. We have cameras on all our doors. You know, we have a person who, you know what, assesses whether they're letting you in or not. We have a 20-minute. If you're a parent, and Joe, you said this before, like, you know, the doors used to be open. They did, but not anymore. And so if you want to come to my school, you have to log on 20 minutes prior. You get, you know, we check your credentials. We make sure that, you know, if you're coming to see, you know, Johnny Smith, well, that you're the father or the mother, and we have all the, you know, so that, correct material. And then we decide, and then when you come to the door, that's already been pre-checked.
So you come to the door. So you don't just buzz me in and ask me if I'm going to attack everyone.
No. And you're on camera, and we got good cameras, so we can see your face nice and clear. And then what we do is, you know, like I said, after we assess that you're, you know, Johnny Smith's father and mother, then we let you in.
So you do pre-registration of your visitors?
Correct.
How did the parents like that?
You know what? Most parents took it well. You know, you always have a few who, you know, you always have your handful who, you know, they just feel they want that same open door policy. But in today's light, you know, whether they want it or not, they're not getting it because you can't. It's the same. There'll be the same parent who'll sit there and complain to you if, God forbid, something happened in your school. They'd be the first ones there telling you, why'd you let that person in?
Sure.
So we, you know what? It's like anything else. You make decisions that are in the best interest of the students and the staff and every visitor in that building. So people may not like, you're never going to please everybody.
Right.
But we're going to secure our building.
Well, I think, and I know you said you read my article that was out there, the three pillars of safety. It's very, very simple. And if you think about this when you're planning it out, you have to have preparation is the first pillar. Then notification. If something starts to happen, you have to be able to notify all your people that something is going on very quickly. And then you have to be able to communicate that to the outside world to get help. So preparation, notification, and communication are the three pillars of survival for any type of a violent situation. So if you pre-register your parents, and I assume they can go online, they can use smartphones, or they can call in and let you know they're coming.
Yes.
As a building, is that building principal, is that important for you to know who's coming?
Absolutely.
So if somebody shows up who's not on the list, what's that say to you?
Bottom line is they're not coming in. And whether I, you know, whether I get called to the front area or whether I call the local PD to come there, you know, we decide, you know, what and why are they there. Right. But they're still not coming in until we assess that.
So an unregistered guest is a surprise, which could be a danger.
And they're not coming in. They'll stand outside.
Now we look at Sandy Hook, and at Sandy Hook, they did lock their doors. They did practice drills, but the shooter in that incident shot right through the glass at the front door and stepped right into the building. Bulletproof glass is what I hear from everybody. And you know how expensive that would be to put bulletproof glass in a school. It'd be, you're going into the millions and millions of dollars. So how do we buy some time? What can people do?
Well, there's a couple things, Joe. And, you know, one of the things is, you know, in the security field, there's a tremendous amount of things that you can do now. And again, you have to assess what's best for your school. And I don't want to go into everything that we do, but we do have some protective steps so that if somebody were to shoot out the glass, they can't just get in there right away. They can't shoot the glass out and reach in and unlock the door.
And that slows them down.
Yeah, so we have steps in place that slow down, you know, anybody who's an intruder and wants to get in and harm anybody in the building.
And in our conversations, what do I give you that phrase? What's the phrase about slowing them down? Time equals life.
Time equals life, absolutely.
So we got to slow them down.
And sometimes it's the small things that make a huge difference. And so when we sat there and did some things to our facility, it did exactly what you said.
Okay. Another thing I see from a lot of people, a lot of school districts, they are locked into this code words. They want to have code gold means lock the doors. Code orange means we stay doing what we're doing, but we don't go to the bathroom on Tuesdays. How do you feel about code words?
You know, Joe, one of the things that I talked to you about it, you know, you make things simple, because in a crisis, people panic and you want people to react. So the simpler it is, the quicker they'll react. For me, we're going into a lockdown. That's it. Clear talk. If there's an intruder coming in, he's already, you know, and he's, so for some, somehow he got into a school building, you don't need to go through it. You just need to lock that building down.
Right. And I think that's where that comes from. Originally, people thought if there was somebody in the building going to do something bad, we should say, code orange, so the bad guy wouldn't know we need to lock down. If the bad guy's coming into the building to attack you, we don't need to go with codes, because the first thing people are going to forget in an emergency, a traumatic incident like that, is the codes.
Yeah, make it simple.
Code orange, code blue. One of the things we look at with locking doors, keeping the teacher's room closed. People talk all the time about how they need to do, we need to always have overwhelming amounts of cops in the buildings. I don't know that that's necessarily true. It helps to have a cop there, but the safest place for us to be during an event like that is locked down safely in a classroom. Make sure the doors can lock quickly, the teacher can cover the window on the door and get the kids out of view of that door. That's the safest place for them to be. When it comes to your drills, do you, I can't believe that this happens, but it actually does in lots and lots of school districts, they announce way in advance that they're going to do lockdown drills. Next Tuesday, we're going to have a lockdown drill at 9 o'clock. And I said, why would you announce that? Because we don't want to upset the kids and the parents, is the answer that I get. How do you feel about unannounced drills in the school?
You know what, Joe, all drills should be unannounced. You know, there's no reason to announce it. The more you announce it, then kids are, it's like, you know, they're prepared. It's like telling them there's a, you know, you got a test or you got a pop quiz. Pop quiz, you know what, you got to be prepared. You got to know what you're going to do. A drill, if I'm telling you 2 weeks in advance, well, I'm going to prepare for that drill. So to me, you don't announce it, you run the drills, and then you get real time, real responses, what people are really doing at that moment. And then when we walk the building to see what actually has transpired, you get a real assessment of, hey, were the doors locked? Did they follow our protocols or not? So, right. Yeah, you know, giving them a heads up doesn't help anybody.
And you're absolutely, and that's what I try to preach to people. Unannounced drills are the most important, because that's where you're going to find your gaps. You want to find gaps in security when you're running a drill, not in a real event. You don't want to find out what doors don't work, who forgot how to lock their door, what teachers didn't lock their door, they couldn't manage to lock their door. And along that line, I know that in Sandy Hook, those poor teachers, their locks, the keys for their locks were, the lock was on the outside of the door. So when that emergency came, they had to go outside of the classroom to try and lock that door. And the very first thing you're gonna lose in an emergency is your fine motor skills. You're not gonna be able to put that key in the door, and unfortunately, some of those teachers could not. I met a woman the other day. She was a teacher in a K through 5 school, and she was a fifth grade teacher. And she told me that right after Sandy Hook, her school had all of these unannounced drills to try and tighten it up, because everyone was scared to death. And she had her key she wore around her neck, and she left her classroom, and she didn't know it was going to be a drill, and she hears lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. She ran to her classroom, and she's trying to put that key in the door, and she heard footsteps coming. And she didn't know if it was real or not, because it was right after Sandy Hook. She was scared to death. And she says, I was standing there trying to get that simple thing of getting that key in the lock that I do every single day. And I heard those footsteps. My heart was beating. I couldn't see. I started crying. I was hysterically scared. And a guy came around the corner, she says, and I thought I was dead. And it was a security guard. And he said, I'm security. This is just a drill. We're just practicing. She goes, but I realized at that moment, I would not be able to put a simple thing like a key in a lock and unlock that door. I couldn't do it. It was amazing. And I wanted to actually record her because her story is the truth. You think you'd be calm, or at least you think I might be upset, but I could unlock a door. And you don't realize how that fear goes down to that fine motor skill, and you don't have that ability. So in general, we know we need to get a threat assessment from a professional company, not one of the free ones. We know that we need to practice our drills realistically. And what about training of your teachers?
Your training, that's ongoing. That is year-long, that is ongoing. You know what, you want people to react, you have to train them. And we can talk about this all day long. It's like a policeman. You know what? They practice with their guns. They practice when they have to do a stop. Teachers have to practice locking their doors, pulling the shades, getting students in a safe area. The more you practice, the better off everyone will be. It's essential that you practice on a regular basis.
That's great. Rob, I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate who you are in the school system. This is coming, you know, right from the guy who has to deal with this every single day. So as we close out round three and this part of our program, I want to thank the neighborhood guys for being here. I want to thank Rob for stopping in to see us, and thank all of you for listening. So keep an eye on some of our sponsors. You know, we talked about MCON IT. They're fantastic for your IT needs in your business. We have Blue Magazine. Fantastic for law enforcement. Anybody who loves law enforcement, wants to learn about law enforcement, it's online, it's free. TheBlueMagazine.com. A-plus Technology and Security. I can't talk more highly about that group of companies, including one of their associate companies, IP Video, which is fantastic camera stuff. And last but not least, I'm going to throw myself in here. Pangaro Training and Security Consulting. I'm available out there to answer questions. I never mind that. This is what I do. It's become my passion. From law enforcement, I went into the schools for 5 years. I learned what the schools need, and I try to provide that to people. So if you have any questions about anything that along the lines of what we talked about or school security, please don't hesitate to email me at jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. You can certainly reach out on Twitter at Pangaro Global Training or anywhere else. But thank you for listening, everybody. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. See you soon.